I love my sports, and I'm going to start this morning by talking a little bit about those sports. And I'll connect everything here in a little bit. But boy, those sports are organized, aren't they? I mean, sometimes chaotic things happen. Sometimes bad calls are made. But for the most part, they're very organized. We play, and I've talked before about a work league we play with. A bunch of folks at work go out to Ben Guerin, and it's governed by the USSSA. And before we started doing this, we figured that, you know, I'm not the best hitter or the best runner, but I'm a pretty good first base coach. So I was going to look up and read up on all these rules and regulations so I can be sure that when that umpire does something bad, I can go out there and tell him about it. For work league softball, it's governed by an 86-page rule book that I read through twice. Still haven't picked up half of it. Oh, that's what we do? I need to go back. Oh, I'm sorry. That's the way most of our Tuesday night or Friday night games go. But games have got all sorts of rules, sorts of things you can't do, sorts of things you can do, penalties, what happens when you do something you're not supposed to do. You name it, they've just about got it all figured out. But the games are equally organized in how they end. They have clear rules and regulations to say how long the game or the match or the race or whatever you're watching comes to an end. Football is rigidly timed. Not so much in that you won't be done an hour late, but you have four quarters of 15 minutes if you're watching college or pro. The NFL gives you the two-minute warning. You know at a certain point this is going to end. When the clock hits zero, the referee, well, what does he do? He blows a whistle. It's the end of the game. Baseball isn't timed, but they have it based on actions there as well. You play nine innings. You try to get three guys out. That's pretty straightforward. When I watch the Cardinals, I don't hear a guy yelling it, but when we're up at Ben Guerin, I hear that called ball game when that last out is made. NASCAR races are a little different. They run a set length. Last night's race was the Bank of America 500 in Charlotte. That means it runs 500 miles. The track's about a mile and a half, so you divide that out and you get 334 laps. And you watch up there at the top left of the screen, and those laps just kind of tick down one after the other. And right about 100 to go, they stop telling you how many laps you've done and start telling you how many you've got left. When they're done, they wave a checkered flag. That signifies that the end of the race has come. All of these sports wind down. And if you're watching them, what happens? You become acutely aware that it's about to be over. If your team's ahead, that clock just moves too slow. It can't move fast enough, can it? It's got to get going. We've got to get done. We've got to hold the lead. If we're behind, you want it to be slow. We need enough time to get ahead, get another first down, get another pit stop. I say all this in comparison to our life here on this earth. When it's the end of the game, it's not measured like it is in sports, is it? Sometimes you get a warning on that. Sometimes disease or injury or other factors make you aware that the end is coming. But sometimes, of course, circumstances are different. It's not something that we can plan for as well. But we do know that, metaphorically speaking, the whistle will be blown. The final call will be made. The checkered flag will fly. We cannot avoid the end of this existence. We can't cheat our way around it. We can't cause a penalty and get fouled out and get pulled out of the game early. There's no wild play that's going to happen that's all of a sudden going to spring us into extra innings or overtime. There's been a study done. Statistics show that out of 100 people they've done this study on, all 100 of them will pass away at some point. That was meant to be a little bit lighter since we're talking about something that's not so light. But it's true, isn't it? Ben Franklin said, in this world, nothing can be certain except for death and taxes. I'm not touching taxes. We'll talk about the other one all day long, but I'm not touching taxes. But that isn't the end, is it? That's not the end for us. And we see in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27, there it is. Did it come up there? All right. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27, just as people are destined to die once, and after that to face judgment, so Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many, and he will appear a second time, not to bear sin, but to bring salvation to those who are waiting for him. I'm not talking all of this today to be, for lack of a better word, morbid. I'm not looking at this today because I want to be sad or I want to be unhappy. It's actually quite the opposite. If we lived this life and we just ignored the inevitable, we just didn't pay attention, didn't give much thought to what was coming, that would be certainly foolish of us, wouldn't it? Being aware of the fact that death will come to all of us. Being fully cognizant, being completely understanding of our mortality is something that can actually be very, very liberating. When I say liberating, I certainly don't mean in the sense that you can go crazy and just do what you want, because it's going to end at some point. But I mean liberating, meaning we get the most, we give the most, we do the most with every single moment we've been given. I like country music. We've talked about that before. There's not a whole lot of music I don't listen to. I think Tim McGraw does a pretty good job. He's been around for a while. I remember him listening to when I was a kid. There's some stuff of his I like and some stuff of his I don't. But he sings a song. And if you've listened to him, you've heard it. It's called Live Like You Were Dying. It's about a man. He gets some medical news and it's not favorable. And he asks another guy, what do you do when you hear something like that? This guy tells him, well, I did all these things. I went skydiving. I went Rocky Mountain climbing. I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu. That wasn't it, though. He said he loved deeper. He spoke sweeter. He gave forgiveness. He became the husband he was supposed to be. He became a friend that a friend would like to have. The song ends with a statement. And that statement is, someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying. It's a good statement and it's a good principle, but we don't have to go to the doctor for that. We don't have to get a bunch of tests and a bunch of x-rays. We can take what God has told us and what God has taught us and live each day on this earth in a more intentional way, in a way of making every moment count. Nice little state highway that runs by us, 252. If you head down that, eventually you'll get to Highway 10. If you head down past Boonville, you get to Magazine. Magazine, you take 109 North, and if you go a couple of miles, you get to a little country road, and for the life of me, I can't think of the name of the road. Dad probably can. But a half mile east on that road is a place called Ellington Cemetery. It's a very quiet place. And there's a good number of folks there, and there's a good number of folks that share the same last name that I've got. There's a lot of Dacuses there. Eventually, the plan is, anyway, or the intention, for more of us to be there. There might be more depending on the generation, but I know Mom and Dad and myself and Laura have already secured plots and plans for that to be down there. But I want to look at one. This is my... Can you see? I don't know how well you can see that.
That turned out pretty well.
I wasn't half sure well the picture would come up there. That's my great-grandmother and my great-grandfather. Now, there's nothing that particularly sets this stone out. I mean, I care for these people, but this is not made of imported marble from Italy or anything like that. This is a fairly common headstone. It's got a name. It's got a good saying. It says, gone, but not forgotten. But what I want to look at are the dates right up there. Now, there's nothing special about that particular date. You won't find that one of them was born on a particular day of importance in history or passed away on a day in history. But look at this in perspective. All of their lives on this earth were in the space between those two dates. One of those starts and one of those ends. And everything they lived, everything they did, you'll see my great-grandmother had quite a long life, occurred between those two dates. Puts that in perspective. There's not a lot of room there, you think, but that's what's there. One day there will be another stone there, and it will have my birthday on it. It'll say September 26, 1983. I don't know when that will be. It is not up to me. But the fact that that will exist there, the fact that that will be there, is something that motivates me every day. Reminders of the end of this life, these are not the only things that serve to remind us of our mortality. I'm a big history buff. I love history. And I could go over in every detail exactly everything that happened to me on that day, on September 11th, 2001, right now. Y'all probably want to get out for lunch and dinner, but I could do it. I'm sure there are some here that could do the same for another date in history, for November 22nd, 1963. Of course, I can't. I was in 83. Remember, we just covered that. There are a few of our church family left that might even be able to do the same for December 7th, 1941. Couple, not too many, and they might be able to, but remembering things, being able to think upon the past like this, that can sure remind us of getting older and feeling older, doesn't it? Do you have any aches? Do you have any pains? I don't ask that question for an answer, but certainly those serve as reminders of time moving on, things wearing out a little bit. Has the hair on your head gotten any lighter? I'm particularly annoyed by that myself. I don't mind my hair going gray. Not at all. I just wish he'd either get there. I am not a skunk and do not like a stripe. All of these things remind us that this life is mortal. Keeping a mindset that reminds us of this prompts us to live life at its best. It helps us to live life as God has intended. But it also reminds us that God made us to live forever. Not here in this form. This physical life will end. But we'll not stop living. We are made for eternity. One of my favorite sections in our songbook back in the day, before we got fancy projectors and we went through sections, is the heaven section. I love singing songs about heaven. Those are some of the prettiest songs I think we've ever written. One of those songs is "This World Is Not My Home," and that song is absolutely correct. Think about this. Do you remember, either as a kid or maybe with your own children, you remember sleepovers at a friend's house? I'm not talking about the part where you get the giggles at 11 o'clock and finally somebody's dad comes up the stairs and says, "Cool it." That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the first one or the second one. Maybe you just wanted to go home. Maybe you called mom and dad and said, "Would you come pick me up?" Or maybe you got a call saying, "Mom, I just want to come home." Homesickness. God created us that way as well. We were created with a homesickness for heaven. This world is fine. There are some fine people here. But eventually we want to go home. We want to be with Him. We want to go to a place where God will wipe away all of our tears. A place where there is no more death or mourning or pain. A place where we will be with Him forever. God's description of heaven is simply beyond our understanding. It will be full of everything. We'll be reunited with others. It's filled with joy and with peace and splendor that's just simply beyond our imagination. Thinking about our own mortality and thinking about that this existence will end makes us live life in a manner that will get us to heaven. It also reminds us that how we live is how we die and how we will be judged. Now, even as I say that, that sounds a little confusing, so I want to put it in a different way. We can't spend our lives engrossed in what this world has to offer, then pass away and be raised thinking about spiritual things. We can't live life here in hate and in jealousy and in resentment and then die and be raised living in love. We can't live in self-righteousness and then die and be raised in His righteousness. Paul tells us the following in Romans chapter 12, beginning there in verse 1. It says, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is. This good is good, rather, good, pleasing, and perfect will." Jesus tells not one, not two, but three parables that illustrate the fact that how we live is how we die. The first is found in Matthew 7. We teach this one to kids as a song. It's about wise and foolish builders. It starts there in verse 24. It says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." The next is found in Luke 12. Jesus is speaking of a man who had been very blessed. It starts in verse 16. It says, "And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But it was anything but that, wasn't it? God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be for whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God.'" The third is found also in Luke, but in chapter 16. It's, of course, the story of the rich man and Lazarus. It says, "There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried in Hades, where he was in torment. He looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, "Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, because I am in agony in this fire." Now, I'm in Arkansas. It's hot. I don't think a tip full of finger is going to be very cooling. I prefer you bring me a cup or a bottle. But that's how much agony he was in, just a tip, just a little bit. But Abraham replied, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things, while Lazarus received bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you were in agony. Besides all this, between us and you is a great chasm has been set in place, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross from over there to us." He answered, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so that they will not also come to this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to him." Then, "No, Father Abraham," he said, "but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to them, "If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." Jesus wanted us to be very clear on the fact that how we live our lives here is of critical importance to what happens next. It's the determining factor from what happens next. There's not an interim. There's not a halftime. There's not a caution flag. There's not anything like that. It's that critical. God has a purpose for each one of us. He expects us to use the blessings He has given us to serve others. We could hear Him saying one of two things. We could hear Him saying in Matthew 25 and 40, the king will reply, "Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me." Or we could hear something else in verse 41, that He will say to those on His left, "Depart from me, you who are accursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels." If we knew that we had a short time left on this earth, it would certainly help us to see clearer that how we spend those days is certainly how we would die and how we would be judged. But being mindful of these things also helps us to maintain our salvation, to live our lives as we are taught to live them. If I were to ask a survey question of who among us here would like to live in doubt and fear, I don't think anybody's going to raise their hand. And if you are, we're going to go talk for a little bit. But we don't want to. We don't need to live this life with our fingers crossed, constantly on edge. We must do everything we can to make our calling and election sure. We must do exactly as we are taught in 2 Peter 1 and verse 5. It says, "For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith goodness, and to goodness knowledge, and to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance godliness, and to godliness mutual affection, and to mutual affection love. For if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive in your knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ." We must also listen to the words of John in 1 John chapter 5, beginning in verse 11. It says, "And this is the testimony: God has given us eternal life, and this life is in His Son. Whoever has the Son has life. Whoever does not have the Son of God does not have life." Look at that phrasing for a moment. Whoever has the Son has life. Having Jesus, we're meaning that in how Jesus lived. Having His heart, having His mind, having His attitude, having His disposition, having His behavior. Living life as Jesus lived life. What we do with Jesus determines where we will spend eternity. Being mindful of our mortality also helps to sharpen life's focus. It sharpens it away from earthly things and more towards spiritual things. Let's look at the word of Paul in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 16. It says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart, though outwardly we were wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." That's a great way of looking at things, but as Christians, that's the way we should be looking at things. There's a lot of people that live their lives like innings don't run out, like the clock doesn't tick. Christians know better than that, don't we? I want to look at one final comparison as we get ready to close this morning. Have you ever been on a vacation and stayed in a really bad hotel? I've made some poor determinations in hotel selection. I'll admit that. The internet helps out a lot with that. You can even Google and get pictures of what the rooms look like. But think about this. Let's say I go on vacation. And let's say I check in the hotel. That's a nice hotel room. But let's say I don't like it. I call up a decorator or a contractor or whoever I want to talk to. And I change some things. So I paint the walls. And I retile the bathroom. That's not me. That's somebody I found on Google. But I change the carpet. That's not me either. I get a bigger television. Or I replace the bed. Or I hang up some pretty artwork. Not that I'd know what artwork is. But what happens at the end of that vacation? Whether I spend a week, whether I spend 2 weeks, whether I spend 2 days or 12 hours. What happens at the end of vacation with this room? Well, I had another graphic, but I'm not going to do it. The point is we go home. We leave this place. It would be so silly for me to do all of those things because we're just going to leave. People live their lives this way every single day. They repaint the wallpaper of life. They focus on what matters here, not what matters there. They're not literally redoing rooms at the Hampton Inn. They're just focusing on only things that matter in this life. They don't think about what happens when it's over. Being mindful of our mortality focuses us on things that will last forever. I don't want you to leave this morning feeling down. That's not why I discussed this. That's not my intention at all. We have discussed things that are, I'll admit, not the most pleasant to discuss. But as Christians, remember, we have nothing to fear. Beyond this life lies a paradise, and it's a paradise made for us by God. God who is loving. God who is loving. God who has promised all of this to us. I talk about this because I want this to be a reminder to grab and squeeze every drop out of every second out of what we have here. Use your life as God would have you to use it. If you're not a Christian this morning, we're going to offer this invitation. At the risk of sounding like a game show announcer, all this fabulous things could be yours if the price is right. But Jesus has paid that price. Jesus died on the cross so that we could go to this place, so that we could have paradise. Excuse me. He called you to come this morning. Accept Him as your Savior. Be baptized. If we can pray for you, if we can pray with you, if there's anything at all we can help you with, won't you come while we stand and sing?